From the New York City area, welcome to the Badass Counseling Show, where the master badass himself, Sven Erlandsson, takes you deep and gives balm for the soul, baby.
Welcome, welcome, all you serious, hardcore badasses around the world, from Brisbane to Bath, from Bombay to Birmingham, Bama. Good to have you all here, and even those in Oconomowoc and Saskatoon. Great to have everyone here today. I am joined in studio by KC, who is not in the booth. She is actually with us remotely. She is working from home. We would say phoning it in. And I am Sven Erlandsson, your host, and the most important person on this show, however, other than our guest. Michelle, is, of course, Rob the Rocket. Roberto, what say ye?
Of course not. Very glad to be here. Always glad to be part of the show. And it's been more than a year and a half. How can someone go through that and not be changed?
Wow.
And I'm ready to go.
Let's get to work. Here we go.
All right, Sven. It was Michelle who wrote into us and said, I've listened to your podcasts and bought your book. Oh, my. Just with five irritants, I found myself so much deeper than I thought. I've been in and out of counseling over the past 10 years. I got divorced 6 years ago and rushed into my next relationship, which gave me everything I thought I wanted or needed. However, now I have reached my limit. I'm confident that he is cheating, and he is most definitely an extreme taker, which has worked well for me since I am an extreme giver, although I think I'm done giving. I'm ready to end this relationship. However, there is so much guilt over taking him out of my grandkids' life and losing my family. I'm also crippling scared of the next phase. I have never been by myself. The mere thought of being alone causes a visceral reaction, which I believe is required for me to move on. I also am undecided if I should pursue a relationship with my mother and sister. There is so much history with them, and I have essentially cut them out of my life. We have very limited contact. I know that my mother is really struggling with this loss. My adult children also have limited contact with my family. I am looking for assistance or guidance in how to proceed with limited failure.
Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is completely ours. Let's dive right in, if I may. I'm going to bang out a few very quick questions, and I want, and I'm doing this for a reason, because the meat is going to come in a bit, but I want to bang out these questions quickly in one sentence or less. I'm going to force you to really distill your thoughts. First question, I've been in and out of counseling over the last 10 years. Why out of?
I guess thought I was fixed, but found new issues. A lot of it was my ex-husband's insistence that I needed to fix me, that he wasn't a problem.
Fair enough. And so what does, again, in one sentence, what does thought I was fixed feel like? How do you know, or how does it feel for you when you think you're fixed? And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just curious.
To feel a little more at peace, or that I got some things off my chest. But kind of looking at it and listening to and reading through and kind of doing some of your work, I've realized that not fixed, just got it off my chest for a moment. It still was there.
Understood. Okay. Well, thank you for the candor on that. Next question. Again, in one sentence or less, you said, I got divorced 6 years ago and rushed into my next relationship. You used the word rushed. I didn't. Why did you rush into the next relationship? And you call it rushed, so you're implying that there was a haste to it, that maybe looking back you regret, whatever, but why did you quote-unquote rush into the next relationship?
I've never been alone. And I was comfortable with the person, knew him previously. We had been in a relationship way back in high school, so felt like I'm older now. I hashed out the, like, red flags, or so I thought, and like, we can do this and let's go forward.
So the first thing you said was, I've never been alone. And then dot, dot, dot to right now at the end, you said, I hash out the red flags, or so I thought. And in retrospect, what was the red flag that either you didn't see or you didn't hash out? What are you seeing now that maybe you let that flag go whizzing by back then? What's the one above all else? If there is one, and maybe there isn't.
There is one, and I even saw it, talked about it. He said what I wanted to hear. but it really wasn't the truth. He is an angry, angry, angry individual and has a flaring temper. And I knew that. I asked about it. I even then verified and checked his history to make sure there wasn't a lot of like assaults that existed. And I believed him. And 1 year later, we were throwing things across the house, breaking things, like just is vilely vicious human. Also, the nicest person I've ever met. Like it is 0-60. You only get one or the other.
Gotcha. And I would ask you, what's the one decision you would go back and make differently? But I'm betting the answer is not get into the relationship. So other than that answer, what is the one thing you would have done differently, you wish you had done differently, or you would do differently given the same circumstances?
Spent time by myself and forged a better relationship with my children.
Oh, so this relationship cost you on the kid's side?
Oh, definitely.
What's the biggest thing it cost you on the kids' side?
I didn't give them what they needed post-divorce because they were all much older. We weren't dealing with, these were three adults and one 16-year-old. So they weren't children, so to speak, and they needed their mom. And I walked away thinking that they needed time and space, and they didn't. They needed me.
It's a hard one.
And they blame him. Although I have taken accountability and our relationship is way better. But.
And you know what? There's just something to be said for when you are the kid in that situation or the adult kid in that situation. There is something to be said for someone willing to take responsibility, even if it wasn't fully yours or whatever, to look that kid in the face and say, fuck it, I'm sorry. At the end of the day, I'm the sort of choke point through it. Yes, you can blame him. Yes, you can be mad at him. But in the end, it was me. And even if it wasn't fully, or even if they don't see it that way, the mere effort to own the shit heals them. So I applaud you for that. I applaud you for that.
I made the choices.
Yeah, no. And your ownership of those in retrospect can and very often does make strides in healing those wounds. And that's honorable. So I respect you for that. All right, continuing. You then went on to say, I rushed into the next relationship, which gave me everything I thought I wanted or needed. And so again, briefly, what did you think you wanted or needed?
My ex-husband was very, very involved. He had a dairy farm, so he worked 24/7, 365 days a year. The cows were more important than everything else.
If there's one kind of farming you don't want to go into, it's dairy farming. I mean, I grew up in farm country, 643 people, Lake Park, Minnesota, and it's just like dairy farming is so hot. The hours alone. Anyway, I'm sorry. I just total mad respect. Shout out to all the dairy farmers. All right, go ahead and make your point, Michelle.
Yeah, so we didn't have, while we had a great partnership, we didn't have a lot of time spent together because it just wasn't possible. He had to milk cows twice a day, 365 days a year.
Yep.
This man wanted me with him at every event. We did vacations. We did trips. He smothered me with attention, which felt really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
From a lack of. And then it just became suffocating because he couldn't do anything without me by his side.
Wow.
So that's why it's like I loved it. And then it hit a point where, like, I mean, I couldn't do anything, like nothing.
That's interesting. So the attention felt great in the beginning, but then you realize it was just this giant vacuum that sucked you right in, and it was, to use your words, suffocating. All right, continuing. However, I've reached my limit on him. You say, you know, he's definitely an extreme taker. I'm definitely an extreme giver. I've reached my limit. You also say, I think I am done giving. What was the point at which you knew it? What was the fuck it point for you? What was the point, at least, up to this point, because you technically, it doesn't say you've divorced yet, you're ready to end, so maybe you haven't quite reached the fucking point. What was the point at which you realized that I think I'm done? What was it? Even if it was small.
I reached the fucking point. We never got married. He insisted on never being married again. So gotcha. I am actually moving today.
Whoa. So I'm keeping you from the move. I apologize for that.
Oh, you are not. It is planned.
All right. I hate the idea of keeping workers from the work. But what was the point at which you knew it's time to go, I'm done? When did you know? How did you know?
he had an episode in front of my grandchildren.
Oh, anger episode?
And said some, yes, and said some very, very derogatory things post episode to me. And I just, I can't do it anymore.
Well, and isn't that interesting in and of itself, Michelle? Isn't it interesting that it took him hurting the kids, even if it was directed at you when he was in front of the grandkids, it took that after, how long have you guys been together? 6 years? No.
7 years.
Seven years.
Almost seven.
It took 7 years of eating shit, or whenever it started, of eating shit, you yourself. But that wasn't enough. And I'm not dogging you for that. I'm not putting you down.
Oh, I know.
But isn't it fascinating what how little we think of ourselves sometimes, that we allow someone to hurt me, and it's not until they're doing damage to someone else, particularly a child, that we feel justified, or that our voice of indignance finally rises up from within. And I applaud you for that, though, Michelle. I really do, because so many people will allow the injustices to continue, allow the anger and the derision to continue, even in front of the children, or sometimes to the children, in this case, grandchildren. So I applaud you for catching it there. That's good. And that gave you, it sounds like that event and then the stuff after gave you that oomph, that final sort of to sort of push past the brink sort of. Is that roughly how it feels inside?
Yeah, I kind of claim, and I've even told him, like, he knew that that was a hard limit for me, for him to ever show his anger in front of my children or grandchildren. And when it happened, he said to me, because I said, you will never speak to me in front of my children or grandchildren like that again. And he said, well, just leave. And I said, you don't know how fucking close I am.
Good for you. Good for
you. And it has gone significantly quicker than I kind of like, just because I, and then it, there was a repeat event like 7 days later. And I was like, nope, this is it. I cannot.
You know, and he did you a favor by doing that. I mean, all of that shit that he did, from doing it in front of the grandkids and then the repeat event, all of it, he did you a fucking favor. It doesn't feel like it, but he did.
No, it's horribly painful.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But he gave you the level of pain necessary to, forgive me, get you off your ass. Level of pain got so bad that the being stuck in the old ways, you were no longer stuck. It finally got so fucking painful. But also, that level of pain brought you a level of clarity. Clarity, 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 clarity. We underrate clarity. Brought you the clarity you needed. It's like crystal clear, man. I know what I got to do, right?
Yep.
Exactly. And it sounds like you're tearing up a bit right now. What are you feeling right now? And the tears are good. Let them come. What are you feeling? Give me a feeling word.
Sad. Just sad that I've allowed. I keep, now that I've made this decision, I can remember all of the horrible things that were said. And I don't believe that I allowed them to be said to me and didn't stand up for myself at that point. I should have. And I continue to just, like you said, eat shit. And it's just sad. I'm disappointed in myself. I need to be able to say, no, I don't deserve to be treated like that, period. And walk away. And I've never been strong enough to walk away. I've always begged for somebody to be and pleaded and done whatever it is to keep the peace. I am not a confrontationalist. I'm not an arguer. I'm not a fighter. I'm not a screamer. I'm not a yeller. I'm not any of those things. I never have been. There was way too much in childhood that I can't. That kind of stuff just sends me over the edge.
Right. It's scary to be in that place, to confront, to stand up, and so forth. And yet, isn't it interesting that by that fear of the confrontation and standing up and so forth, by that fear being placed inside of you, it robbed you of your voice. It robbed you.
Most
of,
definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And it robbed you of that self-protection mechanism, which is really what that is. It's like an internal alarm system that it's not even the alarm, it's the response mechanism, that willingness to stand up, that willingness to step into confrontation. And, you know, nobody likes it. Well, some people do, but yeah. But you don't want to do it, but the willingness to know that if I have to, I can and I will. Yeah, you had that stolen away from you. And so when you say you feel sad that I've allowed such horrible things to happen to me and I'm disappointed in myself, completely understandable. Completely understandable. And yet, that's an indicator of the level of conditioning of and the robbing of your voice, but it's also an indicator of the level of the fear, not just of confrontation, but the fear that you then talk about in your brief autobiography you sent us. You said you flat out said, well, when I asked you before, you know, what do you wish you had done when the first relationship ended? You know, when the first marriage ended, you said, I wish the first thing out of your mouth was I'd spent time alone. And you had said earlier, I had asked you, why did you rush into this relationship? First thing out of your mouth, I rushed in because I've never been alone. Then you state in your autobiography, I'm also crippling scared of the next phase. I have never been by myself. Then in the very next sentence, you say the mere thought of being alone causes a visceral reaction. Clearly, obviously, and you flat out explicitly stated that fear of being alone is massive, right?
It feels unsurmountable, but I'm ready to climb that mountain.
What is for you the single, and you're not alone in that, Michelle. I got a whole bunch of heads around the world right now that are nodding in agreement. People who are like, oh yeah, that's me. Michelle is me. Oh yeah. And the truth is Rob's been there. I've been there. I know KC has been there. We share stories. We've all been there. We have. Swear to God. I swear to God, we've been there. So you're not alone. And what for you is the single scariest part of being alone?
The quiet.
What happens? What happens in the quiet?
You have to think. I've never been someone who could be idle, who cannot be taking care of someone or doing something. I work 80 hours a week. I work two or three jobs. I've always been so, I'm scared of what's going to come out, like what I'm going to have to hear, what I'm going to have to listen to, the voices in my head.
Isn't it fascinating that you're terrified of the screaming voices in your head, and in a way, you preferred the screaming voices of a man and his anger. That's how powerful those screaming voices in the head and down deep inside are. That's how powerful they are. Terrifying.
Yep.
And just out of curiosity, what is one of the messages in that, in those screaming voices inside that you've worked 80 hours a week and absorbed yourself in the serving of others? That's been your drug. The drug, it ain't the booze or the pills or the what have you. Maybe it's those two, but it's the overworking to take your mind off at all. What's the biggest message inside, at least that you're able to identify at this point? What is the biggest message that just comes roaring back when you're alone and when you're quiet?
That I can't do it, that I'm not going to be able to serve, like I can't do by myself. I'm not capable. I'm just like, I don't see me being a strong enough person. And I've never been told that I don't know.
What have you been told?
I don't know.
You've been told I'm not what? What message is it that makes you believe you're not capable and that you can't do it by yourself? What message or messages have you gotten that make you believe that so powerfully that you'd willingly let a man rip you down repeatedly over 7 years? What's the message inside you're so terrified of that is so beating you down?
I was told all of my childhood that I needed to learn how to cook and take care of a man in order to be successful in life, and that I didn't have the beauty and brains or whatever to do anything else. My sister was the gorgeous one. And so I just have this like thought that the only thing that makes me is that I'm taking care of somebody. Wow. At risk of being, at least emotionally abusive relationship.
Yeah.
And I can't get it out of my head. Those statements were said so often. That is just
by whom? You said it was said so often, so it wasn't a one-off, and I might forget who said it. No, you said they were said so often.
Oh, no.
Who said it?
So I think it was started by my stepfather, but my mother joined in very, very quickly.
Started by your stepfather, and what age were you when your stepfather came into your life?
I was 7. This was her second marriage. She's on her third now, but...
Okay, so he comes in.
From the time I was 7 until, I don't know, they are horrible. He's just a horrible man, but anyway.
And, well, wait a minute. You said, so it started with my stepdad, and if he came into your life at age 7, so it's been going on roughly since you were 7 years old, and what would your stepfather say that conveyed the message you need to learn to cook and take care of a man, basically, if you're going to have any sort of existence, because you're not pretty enough and you're not smart enough to do it on your own. So when this heinous piece of shit started saying this in your life at age 7, how was it said specifically, as best
just
you can remember?
Just like that.
Wow.
You better pay attention to cooking and cleaning. That's how you're going to keep a man. That's how you're going to be, you know, make it in this world.
Okay. And so just so I'm clear, Michelle, your mother, you said it didn't start with your mother. So prior to him coming into your life, you have no memory of her treating you poorly or her messages?
She was 20 years old. Like, she had me at 16. I don't, like, all I remember was her partying and dating, and she worked at a bar. I was with my cousins. Like, I didn't have much of a relationship with my mother prior to her marrying that man.
Not much of a relationship. She was busy. And what for you, looking back in having not much of a relationship prior to age 7, prior to that man coming into your life, what, looking back, is the message conveyed to a child up to 7 years old? So there's some science that'll say most of a child's personality is formed roughly by age 4 or 5. So much of the learning and brain and structure of the child. And so a lot of development has gone on by the time you're 7. What, looking back, is the underlying most powerful message conveyed to a child when the mother wants no relationship with her, and presumably the father was absent too, but at least the mother wants no relationship with her and is off partying, and you're off with your cousins? What was the message the mother was conveying to the child by her absence?
That you're not important.
You're not important.
That I don't want you.
I don't want you.
I mean, it was an inconvenience.
That's it. Unimportant, unwanted, inconvenience, which implies burden. Your own mother. Now, we can say, well, she was 20 and she had me with blah, blah, blah. Who gives a shit?
Oh, I've made all the excuses I can for it.
Right. Right. You've made all the excuses you can, and they still fall short, don't they?
They do.
Yep. Yep. Unimportant, unwanted, and burdened, and then burdened. And then, to compound the folly, she brings a man into your life, and he bears the message of, you're not pretty. You're not smart. You better learn how to cook and clean, little lady, and do it for a man, because that's the only way you're ever going to make it and get by in this world. We're going to come right back right after this short break.
I counseled with Badass Counseling for about 4 months, and Sven completely turned my life around. He kicked my butt. No shit. He made me do homework too, but I was so ready for a change that I just did it all. I'm telling you, he changed my life. Thank you so much, Badass Counseling.
This show provides soul counseling intended to entertain and inform and is not medical advice. Now, back to the badass.
And so, Michelle, let me ask you, at the thought that mother is conveying the message unimportant, unwanted, and you're a burden, and that you didn't have much of a relationship with her, and that stepdad steps in with his message of basically you have nothing going for you, so you better learn how to serve people if you're going to have any worth at all. What are you feeling right now?
I have a lot of anger and hurt, pain. I don't know. I I feel broken. I feel confused. I don't understand. I mean, I had my kids young, and I think I was fairly involved and tried, and I became successful.
If I were to ask you, and this is a hell of a question to ask, and I ask it with no malice, but as a straight question, is the crime that your mother committed against you by abandoning you and then turning on you, is that similar or different from how you acted with your present boyfriend towards your own kids?
Oh, it's very similar.
In what way, above all else? In one sentence or less, how is it similar?
I didn't show them that they were important to me.
And you're saying that you had an obligation to do so, right?
I'm their mother.
Exactly. My job. Exactly. It was your job. And exactly, it was your mother's job. And I don't give two shits how old she was. There's no excuse. You don't have the child. And forgive me, Michelle, I don't mean you shouldn't have been born or any bullshit like that. I'm saying now to other people, don't have the child if you're not prepared to sacrifice and to make the child the highest priority. But then the crime gets worse. He comes in and she, her job, whoever's job, his job, and her job and the father's job and everyone's job is to stand in front of the child and take the bullets. There should be no bullets in the first place. But her job was to stand in front of you and to take the bullets and to get you the fuck out of there if there are bullets flying, right? Was that or was that not her job?
It was her job.
That's right. And so,
and she still lets the bullets fly.
And now the bullets are from her, though. It's not just that they're coming from, right?
I mean, yeah, they're from her.
But I mean, you wouldn't have cut off, you said you cut off your relationship with her. You wouldn't have done that unless there were damn good reason for it, right?
Yep.
And so I asked you how it feels at the thought of all of this. First word out of your mouth was anger, that your mom taught you you were unimportant, unwanted, and that you were a burden. And so when you... looking at the anger, feeling that anger, what are you most angry at her for, above all else?
Just not being what I think a mom should be.
And what is that, above all else? What should a mom be, as you see it?
The child's champion. Like, you should say, I'm proud of you. You should, regardless of whether it's a macaroni necklace or, you know, or like, even a decision that's not maybe the best decision. It can be, I'm proud that you like see that this wasn't a good decision and we can work forward. Like you can convey negative messages positively to children.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. On all of that. Yes. Agreed. And she did not convey to you that she was your champion. Instead to her.
No, in fact, she told me I wasn't. It wasn't her responsibility. I've asked as an adult.
Wow. It wasn't her responsibility to what?
I said, I don't understand. I have spent 35, 40 years trying to make you proud of me. And not once have you said you're proud of me. And at this point, I was on the pinnacle of a career. I had 4 very smart, intelligent, driven children. I'd been married for 20 years or 15 years. And she looked me square in the eye and said, I don't think that's my responsibility. Well, why would you think that I'm not proud of you?
Yeah.
I said, well, I guess I'll quit asking.
Wow.
And that was the day our relationship changed. It was, you say it all the time, like it was the worst day and the best day. And I can't, like, because it was like, well, I guess I'll stop fucking doing that. No sense. I mean, she clearly just said it's not her job. I think that it actually is. Possibly the most important job as a parent.
Agreed. Let me ask you this, Michelle. Strange question in light of what you just said. What do you still want from your mom?
Unfortunately, it's her fucking approval.
And if you had her fucking approval, to use your words, if you had that, then what?
I wouldn't believe it anyway at this point. Like, I don't know how to get rid of it.
If you had it. If by some chance she were able to convey it over time beyond any doubt, if she were able to convey that approval, that she approves of you, accepts you, you are my daughter in whom I am well pleased, if she were to convey that over time in a way that was believable to you, then what?
I don't know. Maybe I could have confidence in myself to be able to do something.
I could have confidence in myself to be able to do something. And if you had confidence in yourself to be able to do something, then what?
I wouldn't be so fucking scared.
And if you weren't so fucking scared, then what?
I could stand up for myself. I could be happy alone, if that's what it is. Not allow people to use me. No longer be a doormat.
And what would it feel like to be happy alone, to not allow people to make you the doormat? What would that feel like?
Relief.
Relief. Relief from what, above all else?
Pain and anger and just self, I don't know, such negative self-talk. If I could stop that.
So I'm going to tell you what I just heard. I asked you, what do you still want from your mom? And you said, I want her fucking approval. Your words, not mine. And because I'm utterly opposed to swearing. Good. I thought I'd give you a little relief there. I want her fucking approval. And I said, then what? Then you said, I could have confidence in myself to be able to do something. I said, then what? Then you said, I'd not be so fucking scared. Then what? Stand up for myself. Then what? I'd be happy alone. Then what? I'd not allow people to make me a doormat. Then what? I'd feel relief from the pain, from the anger, and from the negative self-talk. So in other words, if I'm hearing you correctly, if I got that approval from my mom, then I could be relieved of my pain, my anger, and my negative self-talk. If I got the approval from my mom, then I could stand up for myself. If I got the approval from my mom, then I could be happy alone. So in other words, your entire happiness, your entire existence, your entire sense of enjoying life is completely contingent upon one thing and one person. Your mother has the key to your jail cell. You are convinced of it. You have believed it your entire life, just like every other kid. Your mother has the key, and you've been wanting it, begging for it, working your ass off to try to earn it. That didn't work. Doing everything in your power, pushing her away because you're so hurt, you're so wounded, you're so angry that fucking bitch. And, you know, I don't really think anybody's going to argue with me on that one when it comes to your mother. She's a fucking bitch. Fuck her. I fucking hate her. I'm serious. She may be a lovely person to other people. I don't know. But what she did to you, fucking heinous. Okay? And you are of the belief that she and only she can set you free from that cell, that jail cell that you have been in since you were 7 years old. How old are you right now, Michelle?
50.
50. You're young. Okay. So that means at least.
Okay.
Hey, I'm 56. Rob will be the first one to tell you how young you are. Rob?
Ouch.
Okay. 50 years. 50 years. 5 decades of being locked in a cell that she created. It was her job to make sure there was no jail cell. She created the cell, and she has kept you locked in that cell, and she has no intention of giving you the key that you think you need, yet in fact, the key is in your own pocket. Yet in fact, those bars, they feel real. They were all a lie. I got news for you, Michelle. There was never anything wrong with you to begin with. You are a wonderful, smart, beautiful, rambunctious, playful, snotty, wonderful, creative, intelligent, happy, playful, steal a cookie now and then, normal, fantastic little girl. And today, you are a wonderful, beautiful, smart, attractive, creative, rambunctious, steal a cookie now and then woman. Young woman at that. You're only 50. I got plenty of clients in their 70s, even their 80s. Would kill to go back to their 50s. So that means that jail cell was a lie. And it's fascinating that you're still imprisoned in a lie that was never, ever true to begin with. You've heard me tell the story of my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law, yeah, she was in neonatal nurse for God knows how many years, 35, 40 years, whatever it's been. And I asked her, how many kids are born bad? She said, you're an idiot, Sven. No children are born bad. And yet at a very young age, Michelle, you were taught, basically, that you're bad. You're unimportant, unwanted, and you're a burden, which a child will definitely translate into you're bad. It was never true to begin with. It was never true, Michelle. Tell me, what are you feeling right this exact minute, Michelle?
I'm scared.
What's the scariest part? At the thought of this move today, at this thought of being alone and so forth, what's the scariest part of being by yourself? If that's what you're most scared of at the moment, what's the scariest part right now?
I'm scared of the work I have to do. Like, I feel like I know what I have to do, but I know it's going to hurt. It's going to be angry. It's going to be painful. And it's just, it's been so much easier. Well, but not really, to just push it aside and work my ass off. Like, and to just, I'm just scared because I know that I will try and suffocate my children right now. And I'm going to want to be around the grandkids a lot to try and keep myself busy. And I need to put my own self constraints on that so that I do what I need to do to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm scared of all of that so much.
And the scariest part of that is what? Keep going. You're doing great, Michelle. What's the scariest? You say, I'm scared of that so much. And I hear you and I feel it in you. And I have been where you are. Okay. I have been there. I know what you're talking about, but tell us, what is it for you? What's the scariest part of all of that? Say more.
Reliving everything. Like that's what your book tells me I have to do. I basically got to write it all down and I don't really want to do that.
Of course not.
I don't want. I just know I have to, and I'm so scared because I don't want to. It was bad enough the first time.
Yep. And the question will be this time when you're doing the work, the question will be is whether or not you'll allow those feelings up as well. Because the truth is your feelings weren't allowed, were they? There was no room for your feelings, right?
Oh, not at all.
Not at all.
I was a crybaby.
Well, of course. And of course, they shamed you over that as well. That's predictable. But inside of you, even though it hurts coming out, all those feelings, that's the authentic you. That was the real 7-year-old you. Those feelings, those tears, you are finally feeling your real self. That 7-year, go ahead. What do you want to say?
It just doesn't feel very good.
Nope. Not when it's coming through you. Not when you're finally letting it out. But boy, you ain't never felt relief. You ain't never felt relief like the relief that comes after. And even the sweet relief of feeling feelings you were never allowed. And what we need to focus on while you're doing this is the fact, if I'm pounding a nail and I hit my thumb, I'm going to scream. It's going to be a fuck. Man. And I'm angry and probably tearing up a little bit. It's a natural response, right? Okay. But if I were, let's say I had a father and he says, put your feelings away, you little pussy. And, you know, and I wasn't allowed to feel anything. I'd be choking down those feelings, right? But that once I, at some point later, allowed myself, if I ever allowed those feelings out, it would be the relief of getting it out. And yes, you feel it when it comes out. But boy, you do it a few times and you begin to realize that the tears that you're talking about, the anger that you're talking about, as you're doing it, you feel that sweet sense of relief as you're doing it. And you realize the first few times, yes, it's hell. Yes. And there are other times when it's going to be hell. I'm not denying that. What I'm saying is after you've gone through it a few times and felt the relief afterwards, that sweet release and that moment of peace, even if it's just 30 minutes, you feel it once, you feel it a second time, maybe it's 32 minutes the next time, or maybe it's 20 minutes the next time, but you feel it a few times and it's like, okay, I'm ready for this. I want to do a little more. I have a young client, a young woman, 27, and she's in farming industry and so forth. And first time we were in session, we had, you know, intense, sort of like you're having now, except obviously it was longer. She said to me in the second session, about a week later, week and a half later, she said, "Sven, when I got done talking to you, I got into my truck and I got about 20 minutes down the road and I just lost it. I just lost it. And so much came pouring out of me and I literally had to call a friend and go to my friend's house and just have my friend sit with me because I couldn't be alone and I didn't feel safe driving and so on and so forth." And I said, "Then what?" She said, "Sven, whoa, whoa. What happened then is the reason I'm back here now, because it came out and boy, did it feel good afterwards. And maybe it only lasted 20 or 30 minutes, but boy, oh boy." So I know it's scary, Michelle. I know it is. But isn't it fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that the thing you claim to want the very most, well, you thought it was mom's approval, but what's underneath that is you wanted to not be scared, to stand up for yourself, to be happy alone, to not allow people to be my doormat, and ultimately to feel relief. The very thing you want the very most is to feel relief. So you know what the goal is, and allowing up and flushing out these feelings is the ticket to the very thing you want. You start doing it a little bit and you'll begin to realize, yeah, it's true. Let me ask you this one thing. What is the one thing above all else? And I'm not saying you ever have to do it. I'm just curious. What is the one thing above all else that you've never said to your mother, that you most feel towards her, that you have never said to your mother, that a part of you so longs to say, and I'm never going to push you to say it, okay? But I'm just curious, what is the one thing you've never said to your mother that part of you so longs to say?
That I hate what she let us go through.
You hate what she let us go through. Just out of curiosity, what, and just out of curiosity, let us go through? As if she allowed it, do you hate her for that? Or that, do you hate her that she, do you hate that she didn't stop it? Do you hate that she didn't get you out of there? Do you hate that she contributed to what you went through? What do you hate the most of what she did?
I guess I've never looked at it as she had a choice. I mean, I guess everybody always has a choice. I hate that she allowed it and that she didn't stand up for us and take us away from some really, really ugly situations.
Because the job of the parent is to protect above all else, right? To protect.
Yes. Yes.
And what percent do you...
I did it. I did it at her age. I said no. And I took that man out of my child's life immediately. The very first time. My child was 3 months old. And I looked at him and said, "You will never see me or my kids ever again. Do not come and find me."
Brilliant. I love it.
Immediately.
I love it. How old were you when you did it?
She never said that. I was 20 years old.
Oh, so 20-year-olds can do it.
Yeah, you don't fuck with kids.
Exactly.
It's probably the one thing I've done right.
Oh, I guarantee. Oh, come on now. You've done more than that right. Let me ask you though. So you hate her that you hate that she didn't do that, that she didn't do what the right thing was and protect her kids. You hate that she contributed to it. You hate that she allowed him to do that. You hate, you know, that she did all those things. What is your level of hate for what she did?
Oh, it's
100%. 100%. And so then that just caused me to ask the rather obvious question from my perspective. You say you hate what she did. Do you hate her? Knowing it's possible, yep. Okay, and what...
I love her, but I hate her.
There you go. I was going to say, is it possible to love someone but not love everything about them? Is it possible to hate someone but not hate everything about them? What's your answer, Michelle?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Most definitely. I don't think that you can hate someone without loving them.
Well, hey, well said. Okay, so let me ask you, what percent do you hate your mother? If you were to be totally honest, you can change your mind tomorrow, but just off the top of your head, what percent do you hate your mother?
Probably about 80%.
80%. Just out of curiosity, do you tend to, when you're, you know, at work or when you're doing whatever, do you tend to give other people the benefit of the doubt? And do you tend to sort of, when you're assessing yourself, though, sort of put yourself down a little more, but lift others up a little more generally when you're assessing?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay. So is it possible that your 80% might actually be a bit higher?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm trying to be nice.
Okay. So it's reasonable to assume you hate your mother, at least for the time that the hate lasts. Because remember, hate is just a feeling. It lasts as long as it lasts. And once it has run its course, it too shall pass. So let me ask you, what does it feel like to say that basically I hate my mother 80 to 100%, somewhere in there? What does it feel like to say that, Michelle?
It's relieving, but the society tells me that I can't hate my mom.
Oh, really? Well,
like, I feel relief to be able to say that. I say all the time that I hate my stepfather. Like, I have told many people, because I've always said it's the one man in the entire world that I absolutely hate.
And that's the easy one, because he's your stepdad, right? Let me ask you, but you find it harder to say you hate your mom, right?
Way harder.
Right. Let me ask you this, Michelle. Have you ever hated yourself in your entire life?
Oh, countless times.
Of course, right. And let me ask you, what was the age when you hated yourself the very most?
16.
What percent did you hate yourself when you were 16?
80, 90%.
80 or 90%. Just out of curiosity, I know it's a... I don't know the answer, so it's a straight question. What percent do you hate yourself now? Maybe it's zero, maybe it's 12, maybe it's 482. I don't know. What percent do you hate yourself now?
Right now, in today's moment, in the situation, I'm probably maybe 40, 50%.
40 or 50%. And just out of curiosity, what's the earliest in your life you ever recall hating yourself?
10.
10 years old. All right. You can change any of these numbers later on when you're on your own. But just out of curiosity, what does society say about you hating yourself? Because the first thing out of your mouth when you said, Sven, it's relieving to say that I hate my mother 80 to 100%, somewhere in there. But society says, Sven, okay, fine. Society says, what does society say about you hating yourself 80 or 90% when you're 16? What does society say about you starting to hate yourself at age 10? Why is a 10-year-old hating herself? What's going on in her life that is causing her to hate herself? Why do you hate yourself when you're 40 or 50? What does society say about that? I'm curious. Because you found it very easy. You found it very easy to hate on yourself.
I don't think society cares.
Exactly. Thank you. So maybe, and yet, would we be safe to say that self-hatred is not a functional or a good thing? Would that be a reasonable statement?
Yeah.
So then, if it's reasonable to say that self-hatred is not good, in fact, self-love is entirely critical, important. And obviously, yes, that can be taken to an extreme and be bad. Yes, but self-love is important. So then what you're saying, if society says, you know, we don't care if you hate yourself, then it sounds like what you're saying is society is wrong. When it comes to hating self, society is wrong. It says, hey, we don't care if you hate yourself. Oh, and yet you just got done saying
self. We don't talk about that.
Right.
They don't talk about that.
Right. So in other words, the point is that society is wrong on the notion of self-hate. So might society also be wrong on the notion of hating a parent if, in fact, the crimes warrant the hate? Is it possible that on the notion of hating yourself or hating parent that society is wrong? Is it possible?
Oh, yes.
So let me ask you, just sort of above all else, is it that society says hating your mother is wrong, or is it that somewhere in you, you've got basically your own mother's voice telling you, you can't hate me, I'm your mom? Who above all else is quote unquote society in this case?
Oh, it's probably family. It's actually my sister saying you can't.
There it is. It's your sister. And isn't it fascinating in your very last paragraph that you say, gee, I'm undecided if I should pursue a relationship with my mother and my sister. Any thoughts on that now?
I don't think that I can.
Is part of the reason that you wanted to go back and pursue a relationship with your mother and your sister, is part of the reason because you know you're going to be alone in leaving your boyfriend of 7 years?
Yep.
There it is.
I know that's it.
Exactly.
It's a safety net.
Exactly.
All I got to do is play their game.
Exactly. And their game is hate self, honor them. Sounds like a pretty shitty game to me. How about you?
I know, and I don't want to go back and play.
That's it. You can do this, Michelle. You really can. And it's going to be hardest in the very beginning. And let me ask you this. Do you have friends who love you?
And, way more than I thought I did.
Oh, that's a fucking beautiful thing. I love that.
I really thought I was going to be all alone. And I have had people come out that I didn't even know. I thought I was going to lose everybody because they were his friends, not mine. Turns out that's wrong.
I want to open it up at this point to Rob and KC. Rob, any thoughts here?
Just quickly, in school I had apartment mates, two of us from Carolina, one from Duke, so there was plenty to talk about, but the one from Duke could not easily go to sleep any night because he was afraid of being alone with his thoughts.
Powerful.
So I understand exactly what Michelle is saying.
Powerful thoughts. KC, any thoughts from you on this?
Just that you are a beautiful, kind person, and I hope that you're going to learn to be kind to yourself, because you afford everyone in your life grace, and it doesn't seem like you give yourself any. So my best advice to you is pretend you're someone else and then just give yourself some love, because you so deserve it. You said something that I loved. You said parents should be their children's champions. Wow. What a beautiful comment. And I'm going to keep that with me forever, because that's exactly what we need to be. And your parents were not your champions. And you have recognized your own mistakes, and you've broken that cycle, and you've been willing to apologize to your children and to eat that. And that is something. And Sven knows this. I mean, I have people in my family that can't do it. I couldn't do it for the longest time. It takes a lot of courage to take ownership of what we do to our children, even if we believe we haven't done it. They feel that we've done it, and they need that.
And to jump in on you here, KC, the last thing I want to say, Michelle, is this, that fundamentally you didn't get that championing from a parent that you should have gotten. And the truth is, you now, my assignment to you, my homework for you, first thing right out of the gate, is I want you to start with one. There'll be more, but I want you to start with one letter to 7-year-old you, to 10-year-old you. And I want you to write a letter to her. And I want you to be the friend / parent to her that she never had. I want you to whisper in that dear girl's ears. I want you to stroke her hair as you're hugging her closely and say, I got you. You're wonderful. I got you. It's going to be okay. I want you to write those letters to her. I want you to see it in your eyes. I want you to give her all the beauty, all the love, all the championing, all the protection that you never got. You're going back to what they call reparenting. You're going to reparent that child. You're going to say to her, because no one else has, so you more than anyone else on God's green earth, you have to bring the compassion to 7-year-old self. Does that make sense? Can you see how that is of value? Can you see how that 7- and 10-year-old girl was just doing her best? Can you see that?
I can.
Then can you also see how 45-year-old you was doing her best, and she needs your compassion? And you beating up on her and being disappointed in 45-year-old self and 48-year-old self and 42-year-old self and 34-year-old self, that you beating up on her, that's not fair. She was doing her best. Can you bring some compassion to past you?
I can sure try.
That's all I'm asking. And by the way, the other assignment is I want you to write a letter to your mother that you do not send, do not give to her. And I want you in that letter to leave no stone unturned. And I want you to rage at the highest levels of your rage using the most extraordinary language you are capable of and maybe would never ever use to another person. I want you to remember every vent. I want you to flush and flush and flush in that letter to your mother. Hold back nothing. And again, you can't give it to her, but you got to flush it all out. Okay?
Okay.
All right, you're going to join us right after the show. I hope you'll stick around. Rob, any final thoughts? You get the final word of the day.
A very straightforward application of your method, Sven, and I got a lot out of it. I'm sure our listeners did too.
What's the biggest thing you got out of it, Rob?
Well, to confront the truths in your life, to not be afraid to do it, and that, I believe, is the key.
Amen. To all of our friends and listeners and followers and badasses around the world, thank you for tuning in and listening to Michelle's amazing story and the courage that she is conjuring. On behalf of the team and myself, have a kick-ass day.
The Badass Counseling Show is strictly copyrighted. No copies may be made without the express written consent of the Badass Counseling Show, LLC. The Badass Counseling Show is produced by Karen Camparelli and Robert H. Friedman. Executive producer, Sven Erlandson. Original music by two-time Emmy Award-winning composer, Trevor Morris. Have a kick-ass day.